Hello again. We're coming to you from the trenches. I'm Rita Sand.
I'm not voting for anybody for Congress who does not promise to support a bill of impeachment against George W. Bush if he's elected to Congress.
Strong words from Michael Avery, president of the National Lawyers Guild. Avery's speech in Chicago about the Guild's lawsuit against President Bush is coming up. But first, we turn to the immigration issue.
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Law!
What do we want?
Justice!
I can't hear you. What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
On May Day, hundreds of thousands of immigrants and their supporters crammed the streets of Chicago in a peaceful demonstration against immigration legislation in the U.S. Congress that would criminalize undocumented people in this country. The largely Mexican crowds shouted for justice for immigrants. To many, that means amnesty.
My name is Willie.
And why are you here?
We want an amnesty.
I'm here for support the cause for the immigration laws.
What would you like to see?
Change in the laws and the president to help us
for
legalization.
Yes, legalization for all my people. We just give all these people an opportunity to have a job and be able to have a car, be able to, you know, have an insurance. You know, basically, it will bring them from the shadows. Bring all these people from the shadows. This is what they need.
My name is Lydia. We came here to support our people. Yeah, we're not criminals. We're here to work.
What's your name?
Cassandra.
Why did you come?
Because my people need work.
It's no accident that immigrants chose May Day, International Workers' Day, for their demonstration, says Jorge Mujica, lead organizer with the March 10th Coalition, speaking on the eve of the march.
We pick and choose exactly May Day because we want to make this movement into a workers' movement. This is not about just papers. Having papers and being legal is not going to increase our wages, it's not going to give us health insurance, it's not going to give us, you know, the employer to pay us the overtime they owed us forever. So we have to go further than legalization. We have to organize interlabor unions, fight for the right to organize, to strike, and to fight for our working conditions.
Mujica sees this as a continuation of struggles by largely immigrant workers who rallied 120 years ago in Chicago to secure the 8-hour working day. Indeed, the present immigration controversy is not new and hinges largely on labor issues. But what is absent from the dialogue in the mainstream media are the push and pull factors that have accelerated the rate of Mexican immigration in the last couple of decades. A new article by Richard Vogel, a writer for the Monthly Review, shows the dramatic rise in illegal immigration from Mexico since the passage of the North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, in 1994. Vogel, a retired public high school teacher in Houston, where many of his students were Hispanic, explored the history of Mexican immigration in an article he wrote for the Houston Institute for Culture called Stolen Birthright, the U.S. Conquest and Exploitation of the Mexican People. Vogel says several U.S. programs have resulted in pushing Mexicans north in search of opportunity. NAFTA in the 90s, the U.S.-backed devaluation of the Mexican peso in the 80s, and in the 60s, a program nicknamed BIP, the Border Industrialization Program.
The Border Industrialization Program, which established the Maquiladora manufacturing belt, originally right around across the border. They were supposed to be twin cities. They were supposed to be linked, you know, a city in the United States linked with the city. So it would be like Juarez and El Paso or Laredo and Nuevo Laredo. And the whole point was, and it was announced publicly by the U.S. Department of Labor, was to tap into cheap labor on the Mexican side. And the other thing, of course, was American industries could ship goods, they could ship things to be assembled in Mexico and then bring them back, and the value added would not be taxed. And the United States manufacturers would avoid any kind of responsibilities like schools to train workers and, housing issues and taxation issues, because the Mexican government arranged that they could just get their goods, you know, and move them back across the border on the value added. Now, what happened were, when the American companies got over there, they immediately realized that what they could do is hire women labor cheaper than men, because that's just historical, you know. And so they were hiring women in the factories, and the men who were coming to the border towns who had been displaced by the programs you mentioned earlier got to the maquiladoras and found out they weren't going to get hired. And they're looking across the border, and the Rio Grande is not that impressive down here. In fact, it dried up at the mouth here a few years ago. And just automatically went across the border because they couldn't go back to the south. There was nothing in their hometowns and in the Mexican cities. So they moved on across the border, and that was the big flood of male, single male immigrants that were showing up in the United States. And they also did not want to compete with women workers in the factory. Anyhow, none of us do. Women work too hard. They're too focused. So right away with the maquiladoras, it put pressure on, illegal migrants coming into the United States immediately. Now, NAFTA, and, that was good old President Clinton said that it was going to eradicate poverty in the South and equalize wages and everything, but that's not true because NAFTA duplicated what happened on the border, only took it deep into the interior of Mexico, but with the same results, and that was with pressure on the single males, push from at home, and then the pull of cheap jobs in the United States. And what I call a gatekeeper border policy, which is a porous border that allows people to come through, and not be stopped. At one time I was a truck driver, and I had an opportunity when I went down to the border to cross into the border and bring back a truckload of workers for a big corporation here in Houston, Texas, and I chose not to take it because I didn't want to carry human cargo. So this has been going on for a long time. NAFTA made it worse. And then the austerity programs imposed on Mexico by the United States, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, the austerity programs also have driven, farmers off the land and workers from government industries, because everything's been privatized, and loosened them up too. So we have the odd situation where even though the maquiladoras are the third largest source of income in Mexico, the actual wages for workers have gone down, especially since NAFTA, and the total number of jobs employed have gone down.
Now, President Bush says it's not practical to repatriate all these people, 12 million undocumented workers, back to Mexico. But there have been, and you write that there have been repatriation campaigns in the past. Can you tell me just a little bit about those?
Okay, historically, The first mass migration into the United States of Mexican workers was during World War I, when the manpower drainage in the United States created this massive shortage. We had so many men overseas and all support group, and then all the industries in the Northeast and the Midwest supporting that. All the native farm boys left and went to the cities and took their families with them, And if they weren't drafted, we're moving to get these jobs. And so the government of Mexico did their share for the American war effort by opening the gates and letting workers come across the border. The U.S. Border Patrol, which was originally set up to control Chinese labor, it was an open-door policy for years for Mexican labor. They just came and went. It was like an open door to Mexico. The Border Patrol was originally set up to stop Chinese laborers from coming through Mexico, especially into California. They used to recruit for employers. The U.S. Border Patrol used to recruit. I've got recruiting posters, copies of recruiting posters that they used to have. So there was a big buildup of Mexican workers, and they set up their own communities, then they moved into cities and all the way to Chicago and New York and St. Louis and all over the place, Kansas City, Omaha, Nebraska. Okay, and then the Great Depression hit, and then they started the repatriation campaign, which technically is not repatriation. It was a deportation. You can't be repatriated. That's not definition of repatriation. But they were forced out. They were loaded on buses. They were forcefully removed. The one during the Great Depression was informal but very effective. The second cycle started with World War II. Again, massive migration to the United States. A lot of times they went back. I've actually heard stories where they went back and moved into the homes that their parents had been in during the first in-migration, and set up communities again and, set up schools again and everything else. And that lasted all the way through the end of World War II and then through the Korean War. It wasn't until 1954 that the second purge, it's more of a purge than anything else, was started, and it was called Operation Wetback. And it was run by a general who changed the Border Patrol. This time it was a military operation, and he re-outfitted the Border Patrol with military weapons and military cars and green uniforms. And Operation Wetback, again, split families and communities and forced people back across the border. In fact, it was scandalous because Mexicans were being transported, for example, deeper into Mexico to make sure that they wouldn't come back. For example, some Mexican workers were being shipped out of Port Isabel, Texas, and Corpus Christi, Texas, back to Veracruz, so they'd be so far away they couldn't get back. And these were in charter ships. And in one incident, several other men jumped overboard and tried to swim back and drown. And there was an international incident about that. And they had to stop doing that. But they were flying them back, you know, to Puebla and even deeper south into Mexico.
You write that you don't think that there's going to be a deportation campaign for the 12 million that are in the country right now. Why do you say that?
In the first place, they're so deeply ingrained into the economy. The economy is dependent on them. That's one thing. And that's why Bush is pushing so hard to get a guest worker program and to get some kind of amnesty for these workers. The other thing is the people themselves, the immigrants, know what's at stake and know what the issues are. And one of the most amazing things that I've seen was on April 10th, I went to the demonstrations and walked with the people and wore white and talked with them and tried to communicate with them the best I could. Also on May 1st, we had several hundred thousand in Houston. That's not what the press reported. People coming out. These are people who try to stay invisible because they're, you know, they're undocumented aliens in the United States. They live invisible. Came out demanding justice. Brought their families with them, proudly brought their families with them. I don't think these people are going to run the way they did before. In Operation Wetback, most of the deportees were rounded up in rural areas because they lived in what were called Mexican towns, which were usually settlements on a central farm or a central ranch where all the farmers would let the Mexicans live. And they were easy targets and they were easy to find. You know, they didn't even have transportation. You know, now you have immigrants whose children are going to college or going to high school. They buy cars. They buy houses. They've got equity in homes. There's been, you know, some fuss about that, but they pay their bills, right? And that's a lot different when the stakes are that high. The stakes are a lot higher than they are before. And as far as I can tell, these people understand the services that they're providing to the United States, and they're not demanding anything except recognition for what they're doing and credit for what they're doing. I don't think they're going to go all that easily. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to be intimidated that easily, and they have resources to fight.